turn to Esther chapter 6. We'll be beginning there. If you remember last week, we had discovered that Haman just could not stand the thought of Mordecai being able to be left alive. Even though Mordecai had saved the king's life, Haman just couldn't stand him because he wouldn't bow down to Haman. And so he, even though he had a great position, riches and the honor of the king and great position in the land, they just couldn't stand it. Couldn't live with Mordecai living. I guess it was one of those cases you heard maybe in the old westerns or something. They would say, well, this town ain't big enough for the both of us. And I guess that's the way Haman felt about Mordecai. There just wasn't room in the kingdom for both of them. Well, in chapter 6, if Haman thought it was bad for Mordecai to just be alive and sitting on the street corner by the king's gate, he was in for a big surprise. In chapter 6, the king asked Haman, how should I honor somebody? If I want to really honor somebody, what should I do? And verse 7 says, Haman answered the king. See, Haman thinks, he's talking about me. He's going to give me some great honor. So here's how Haman answers him. For the man whom the king delights to honor, let the royal apparel be brought, which the king used to wear, and the horse that the king rides upon, and the crown royal which is set upon his head, and let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man with all whom the king delighted to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Well, boy, that, you know, that sounds pretty good. You know, we've heard the phrase, king for a day. Well, that's what Haman said. He said, king, if you really want to honor somebody, let them be king for a day. Let them wear your royal apparel and put your crown on their head. Let them sit on your royal horse and go through the street and let everybody know that if you do good things for the king, the king's going to honor you like this. And so he thinks he's got something really good going here. And the king thinks it's a good idea too. So verse 10, then the king said to Haman, make haste and take the apparel and the horse as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew. Now that's ironic, isn't it? Here Haman takes up the way that the king can honor him the most, and then turns out he has to be the one to honor Mordecai that way. The cat's in the building again. Somebody's let the door open. Good luck. If the cold air wasn't a good enough reason to keep the door shut, now we've got a cat too. So he says, go do that to Mordecai the Jew that sits at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. And so Haman, who couldn't stand Mordecai anyway, now he has to actually be the one leading Mordecai around, dressed in all of that finery on that fine horse, and saying, anybody that the king honors is going to be treated this way. How humiliating. How humiliating for him to have to do that. Now, it wouldn't have been humiliating for him if it weren't for the fact that he had allowed his pride to puff him up to think that he was too good for such a thing, or to think that Mordecai was so horrible that he deserved only to die. We didn't read this section, but the wife of Haman, her name is Zeresh, she had a suggestion for him about what he should do about Mordecai. She said, build you some gallows and give you a rope and tie it in a noose and you can hang him on that thing. And she thought that's what he ought to do to Mordecai. Well, that's what he had in mind. He certainly didn't have in mind going around honoring Mordecai. But the king had found out that Mordecai had saved his wife. And so he wanted to give honor to Mordecai. Well, then we have the second time that Haman and the king come to dinner with Esther. The first time, you know, Esther's sly. She knows how to work it. Jesus said the children of this world are wiser than the children of light. Well, Esther had that kind of wisdom that the people of this world had. She knew how to work things. And so what she did was, the first time, instead of just coming out and asking him the big thing at first, her first request was, well, if you would you and Haman just come to dinner with me? And so she fixed him a fine dinner, and I'm sure it was very good food, so much so that they wanted to come back the second time. And at the end of the first dinner, he asked her, what do you want me to do? And she said, well, if you could just come back tomorrow night. Now, part of that may have been she was building up her own courage. It's kind of hard to face the king and ask him some of these questions sometimes. But at any rate, she was buying some time to work up her courage, but at the same time, she was getting him used to the idea of saying yes to whatever she asked. Well, would you come to dinner again tomorrow? Oh, yeah, well, you know, that was a pretty good dinner tonight. I wouldn't mind doing that again tomorrow night. So Haman and the king are coming to dinner again. And so here they are in chapter 7. And in verse 3, he finally asks her again, well, what do you want? What do you want me to give you? And so Esther answers and says, if I found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition. Now that's kind of, she basically said, just let me live. And so the king doesn't have any idea what she's talking about. And so then she says, and my people at my request, for we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue. She said, if it was just we were going to be sold into slavery, I wouldn't have even said anything. She said, that would have been okay. I would have let that happen. But she says, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage, then the king, Ahasuerus, answered and said unto Esther the queen, who is he and where is he that does presume in his heart to do so? So now he's getting right down to it, okay? Now somebody's going to kill the queen and all her people? Wait a minute, who's going to do that? If I find out who this is going to be, I'm going to take care of this problem. And sure enough, Esther then says in verse 6, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman, this guy right here sitting next to you at dinner, king. He's the one that's doing it. And then Haman, and rightly so, was afraid before the king and the queen. His plot had been uncovered. And he didn't know that Esther was a Jew at the time he had come up with this scheme to kill all the Jews. He certainly didn't know that Esther was Mordecai's niece when he had come up with this scheme to hang Mordecai and to kill all of the Jews. But he had worked things out with the king to do that. And the king, for whatever reason, wasn't wise enough to know better than to do that, and he went along with it until he realizes here what Esther has said. And then it got even worse. The king was so angry, he stormed out of the room, and Haman threw himself on the bed to beg for his life from Queen Esther, and the king came back in and thought, oh, he's trying to take advantage of the queen, too. And so in verse 10, you remember those gallows that Haman had built for Mordecai? Yes, sir. They hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. And then was the king's wrath pacified. The king was, that was good enough for him. He had killed Haman for what horrible thing he had planned. And the king was ready to stop there. The problem is, the king had sent out the letter with his royal seal that said that the people could kill the Jews on that particular day. And so they had to do something about that. Now, it's a weird thing about the laws of the Medes and the Persians. Once the king set something in stone, it could not be changed. Aren't we glad our laws aren't that way today? Our laws, if we find out it was a bad law, we can have it changed. We can get it reversed. But their law, if they set the law down in writing and put their seal on it, that was the law. Remember, Daniel ran into that problem when he was not supposed to pray to anybody but the king for 30 days. And he prayed to God anyway. The king, then, when he found out about it, he was upset. But he said, well, you know, it's the law. I can't change the law. And that seems kind of silly to me that the king who made the law can't change the law. I'm glad God doesn't work that way. God made the Mosaic of law. I'm glad that he was not that way, that he set that law and said, well, I can't change it. No, but he could change it, and he did change it. And we now have a better law built on better promises, because God was not a king like these human kings were. But here we have then the solution. Esther and Mordecai get together and work out something that will try to save the Jews' lives. And in verse 11 and 12, they had some letters written up wherein the king granted the Jews, which were in every city, to gather themselves together and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for a prey upon one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, namely upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar. So what the king said was, well, I've already said that everybody kill the Jews on that particular day, and said, I can't change that, but here's what I'll do. I'll tell the Jews about that day, and that they can gather together, and they can get their weapons, and they can work together to defend themselves if anybody tries to kill them, and they can kill anyone then that tries to attack them. Well, this seemed to satisfy the Jews and Esther and Mordecai as well, that this was as fair a way of handling the situation as it could be. Now, I can't imagine that's a very good situation for a kingdom, though, to have the people fighting with each other, killing each other. I mean, can you imagine if the United States passed a couple of laws like that, said, well, all the people of this particular race or this particular group can kill all the people of this other group, but then they turn around and say, well, this other group can get their weapons and fight again. Well, why, it'd be mass chaos all over the countryside, wouldn't it? And that's what they had here. Fortunately, it was contained to just a couple of short days. As we see in chapter 9, in verse 1, it says, now in the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, on the 13th day of the same, when the king's commandment and his decree drew near to be put in execution, in the day that the enemies of the Jews hoped to have power over them, though it was turned to the contrary, that the Jews had rule over them that hated them. So it turned back on all of those people who, like Haman, hated the Jews, and instead the Jews won the victory and wound up defending themselves and destroying their enemies with the sword. And then down toward the end of chapter 9, we have record of one of two Jewish religious holidays that were not part of the original law of Moses. Because of this event that took place, they made a holiday about that to remember this time when their lives were saved from being destroyed. That's a pretty good thing to celebrate, isn't it? The day that your life was saved, that's a pretty good thing to remember and to celebrate. It says in verse 25, but when Esther came before the king, he commanded by letters that his wicked device, which he devised against the Jews, should return upon his own head. This is talking about what Haman had wanted to do. And that he and his son should be hanged on his gallows. Wherefore they called these days Purim, after the name of Pur. Therefore, for all the words of this letter and of that which they had seen concerning this matter and which had come unto them, the Jews ordained and took upon them and upon their seed and upon all such as joined themselves unto them, so that it should not fail, that they would keep these 2 days, that being the 13th day and the 14th day, that they would keep these 2 days according to their writing and according to the appointed time every year, and that these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, every family, every province, and every city, and that these days of Purim should not fail from among the Jews, nor the memorial of them perish from their seed. And certainly it hasn't. To this day, the Jews still celebrate Purim. That those days where they were delivered from their enemies by the work of Mordecai and Esther. And it's a very special event for them. So we have here now the conclusion of the matter. And finally in chapter 10, it just explains how great King Ahasuerus was and how his fame spread. And then in verse 3, about Mordecai. Mordecai the Jew was next unto King Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and accepted of the multitude of his brethren, seeking the wealth of his people, and speaking peace to all his seed. Not much better could be said about a man in relationship to the people around him than what's said about Mordecai here. That he was great among the Jews, and accepted of the multitude of his brethren, that he was seeking the wealth of his people. He was seeking their welfare. He was looking out for their best interest, for what was good for them. And if we could get some politicians that would look out for the people's best interest instead of their own, wouldn't that be good? But Mordecai was that kind of person, and it says he was second or next to King Ahasuerus. He was second in the land. And of course, all of this as a result of the courage of Esther, that she was willing to risk her life to go to the king to prevent this horrible slaughter of the Jews. So many wonderful things in that little book. The way that God works behind the scenes. No miracles there. You won't read about a single prophecy. You won't read about a single miraculous event in the book of Esther. And that is so very important for us today. Because we know that the miraculous things that happened in the first century, the miraculous things that the prophets and those in the Old Testament did, we know that God doesn't work that way anymore today. And yet we do know that he still works. And he can work with us and through us just as he worked with Mordecai and Esther, and through them save the people. So this is quite a wonderful book for us to know that God will be with us if we'll be with him. And even though God's not mentioned in the book of Esther, I think we can see very clearly that he was all over it. He's all over that book, but he's never mentioned by name. And that's the way God works now. Behind the scenes, he's not, it was kind of like in the movies, they have the movie star that everybody looks at, but behind the scenes, all of the people that are doing all of the things to make that happen, and nowadays even more so than ever with all of the fancy stuff that they do. And people that whose name, you know, they're not famous. Nobody would recognize them if they walk down the street. And God works that way as well. Not always out front, not always visible in the affairs of mankind, but working nonetheless. If you're here tonight, you have a need to respond to the invitation. Perhaps you haven't been a servant for God like you should have. Esther and Mordecai worked diligently to do what they could to save God's people. Perhaps you haven't tried to do anything to help God's people, or even yourself. If you're here tonight and you have a need to respond to the invitation, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.